Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to the Omega Leadership Series show. Once again this week, we are here in Studio G to talk about the principles and styles of an Omega leader. And with us in studio this week, we have Lori Beth Jones, best-selling author of Jesus in Blue Jeans, which is our focus for the next few weeks. Welcome, Lori Beth.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
And we have Vicky Arteaga representing the business pillar. Welcome, Vicky.
Thank you. It's great to be here. And, you know, we have a friend in Argentina that might be listening. It's Eduardo Petrarca. So, hello, Eduardo.
Excellent. And representing the education pillar is?
Alyssa Holston, and it is great to be here.
Excellent. Everybody's here, raring to go to talk about thunder and lightning.
Thunder
and lightning?
Exactly. Thunder and highest gifts.
Oh, thunder and gifts. Okay. That makes it a little bit easier. So we're excited, Lori Beth, to jump into a new section of what it means to be an Omega leader under this book of Jesus in Blue Jeans. Divided into four sections, we have perspective, which we've been talking about for a few weeks, and passion, which we are getting ready to move into, and poise. I believe we talked about poise as an Omega leader. How do you have that? And then we will close this probably right before the end of the year with, what's the other one? Power. So we are talking tonight about passion. And Lori Beth is here so graciously to open us in conversation around this topic of passion and how the Omega leader leads with thunder in their hooves and from their highest gifts. So open us this evening, Lori Beth.
Thank you, Shelley. This little chapter on page 105 to 107, I think it's two pages long, has become a central core tenant. Is it tenant or tenet? T-E-N-E-T. I have real estate property, so it's tenant. Anyway, tenet of everything that we teach, because if you are not practicing your highest gift, who's going to? And studies have been done. I believe Stephen Covey Organization surveyed 100 corporations around the world and 10,000 people, and they ask them, how often do you get to practice your highest gift or strength at work? And 85% of them said never. So that is a huge waste of talent. And, you know, we talk often about there's no such thing as a wrong musical note. Think about the disharmony when you're never getting to hear that drum beat, or you're never getting to hear that bass guitar, or you're never getting to hear that soprano alto sing, because they're really enslaved to a lesser god. I was reading a phrase in here that I had forgotten that I'd written, actually, and it said, if we're not serving and using our highest gifts, we must be enslaved to a lesser god. So I'd like to ask, open up the discussion with a question, who are the lesser gods that enslave us and keep us from using our highest gift?
That was my question for you.
Turnabout is fair play.
I think pragmatism sometimes can be something that causes us to. I think pragmatism can be something that might distract us from pursuing our highest gifts.
Pragmatism meaning?
Practicality. I mean, just being practical, wanting to put bread on the table and perhaps, you know, taking the safest route rather than the riskier route of pursuing that higher gift. A lot in the chapter you refer to artistic talents, and so in that realm I think it's those are risky ventures, mm-hmm. you know. And mm-hmm. musicians have day jobs,
right.
you know. And so I think sometimes it's just the need to survive sometimes might have people put their primary gift or talent on a back burner in order to survive day to day.
Well, I think that premise is true, and on the other hand, I'd like us to think about the fact that practicing your highest gift. If you're a musician, you're used to creating music or bringing harmony. Can you do that in your workplace, or do you have to have an instrument in your hand? So there's, I'm about divine connection. Do I have to be preaching in a church to do that, or can I speak to someone at 7-Eleven and just say a kind word to a waitress who I saw crying in the bathroom, or something like that? There's many ways to practice your highest gift. The discipline that we teach and develop with our coaching program and our clients is you need to be in that realm at least 85% of the time. That's when you're at a level of mastery. And so how do you get there? That's what everything we do is about.
And a little bit in business, for example, you could be working out of the goals of your company and, you know, just trying to hit the goals or things like that, and a little bit forget about developing your gifts. So, as you said, what of those goals are compatible to my goals? And just always try to link the core values of the organization you belong to with your core values. Hopefully they coincide, and that's why you're working there. And that way it's easier, I think, to go back and forth using your gift in your spare time and in your office.
We were on a call earlier today, a business-related call, talking about the very issue of gifts and talents and how sometimes people are afraid to live their gift. They're afraid to pick up the guitar and move forward with it because in the back of their mind, their parents and the church and educators around them are saying, but isn't God calling you to be a missionary, or isn't God calling you to serve in this way? Or, you know, so I think a lot of times the enslaved to a lesser God can even show up in the church in a way that causes people to move falsely towards service without considering their highest gift.
Mm-hmm. See, in the book you talk about Martha, 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 Martha. and you brought up,
don't you love Martha? Here's to Martha.
Here's to Martha. But poor Mary, I think she gets poor Martha, I think she gets a bad rap. I think because. And I'm glad that you clarified that kind of in the beginning. It's not necessarily acting out that gift necessarily the context. You can act out that gift in a variety of contexts, I think is what you're saying. And I think that Martha gets a bad rap sometimes because Mary is esteemed as having had the higher gift because she was sitting
not necessarily the higher gift.
But I agree. But sometimes if one could read that passage and take Jesus' words to Mary and walk away saying that Mary had the higher gift. And I think that Martha's gift was equally valid because Martha obviously had the gift of service and of hospitality, and that's how she was serving. And maybe the danger and the conflict came when Martha was trying to superimpose her priorities onto Mary and questioning Mary's exercise of her gifts and praise and adoration and presence and whatever that may have been, where Martha, in serving and hospitality, was creating a place and a venue for them to come together and to relate to Jesus, which is equally valid. So sometimes I think there's this hierarchy of gifts. So it's maybe can you talk to the highest gift? It's not initially highest in our paradigm, but it's highest within a person. Does that make sense? In other words, it's not that...
It's the recognition.
Right. It's not that Martha's gift was higher. It's not that Mary's gift was higher than Martha's gift in some celestial hierarchy of giftedness. But Martha's highest gift was service, and Mary's highest gift was at that time just praise and adoration and soaking Jesus in. Or I don't know how you would define her gift. Can you speak to that a little bit?
Well, I think the Mary and Martha passage is one that women are very sensitive to. And there have been many books written about the dynamic between them. As I'm sitting here thinking about it, it was, in one sense, Martha was enslaved. She became a slave to her gift and missed the presence of God. And that's another issue. I've hired a personal trainer who is working with me. I'm sore every day. But she was having me do some really strange things with straps that were developed by a Navy SEAL in Afghanistan who couldn't have a gym. And so it's all about leaning back. And she said, we're going to develop your back muscles. And she said, you notice when really muscle-bound people, they're always hunched over. And I'm thinking of, you know, even Arnold Schwarzenegger and the Terminator and all that, you know, the big, it is true that their back muscles are almost, they're hunched over because they haven't developed the full poise. And so what I'm saying there is they become so enslaved to getting their chest and their deltoids or their pecs built up that they miss the overall physique of the body. So maybe that was off track a little bit. Shelley's going, what are you talking about? It's like, I'm sore, Shelley. I'm thinking about my trainer's exercises.
I was going back to what you were saying about the hierarchy of the gifts. I agree. There's not such a thing. However, what is the intent? What are the motives of her, as you say, overimposing her gifts into other people or trying to? So I think if we go back to intent, your gifts, what is the intent? What is the primary objective for you to exercise your gifts? It should be something totally give glory to God.
The purity of it.
And not look at me, how good I am in whatever I do, right? And so I think it goes back to intent, too.
Okay, well, that brings up a whole other subject in terms of misuse of gifts, or if there is such an idea. But, you know, what is the purpose of our gifts? And we can certainly take those gifts, and we can use the gifts. We can be exercising the gifts, but perhaps squandering them and not really applying them to their intended purpose, which ultimately is to glorify God.
Wow. That was fast. I missed, like, most of that. I'm still stuck back on the first one. What was I going to say? I'm so mesmerized by the quickness of that fire intent.
I thought you were mesmerized by the message.
Yeah, that too. So, when we think of gifts, whether in, you know, Lori, you have a free download on the website called The Seven Gifts of Business, right? We also talk about natural gifts, and we talk about spiritual gifts or natural talent. And so the word gifting, highest gifting, do we even really know what our highest gift is? Or do we think it's something that we're really good at? Or is it something that somebody else told us that we were good at and we just kind of blow it off and say, you know, I do that for fun. That's not really a gift. And I think that maybe, I don't know, because I wasn't there, and the text isn't real clear about this, but I wonder if Jesus recognized the higher gift and called it out as a teachable moment, obviously. Because Mary may not have known that she had that gift, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But something within her exercised it. And what caught my attention, Lori, as you were in writing this, is that Mary practiced the gift.
Mm-hmm.
For Martha, it may have been a natural talent that really didn't need to be exercised.
Mm. Well, and there's a whole other layer to that, too. They're telling me to slow down. of the societal expectations. In terms of, so Martha was doing exactly what she was expected to do. So her giftedness really, if that was her giftedness, for the sake of argument, let's say it was. Hospitality is her giftedness, just for the sake of argument. Then that was perfectly acceptable and expected of a woman in that era. Well,
right.
Today, but even more so in that era and that culture. Whereas Mary, to take a different role, was not something that fell within the expectation of a woman, and so even more poignant that Jesus calls it out. Jesus had to call it out to validate her, because her own sister was questioning how she was using her time,
mm-hmm.
right?
I think, too, as I've been working on the elements and Jesus and the elements in the gospel, and I've noticed that he constantly praised water moments, water being the relational element. And I think in the church, and certainly in our culture, we go after the earth fire, the results, the results, the results. But think about the woman who interrupted the party and knelt and washed his feet, and she broke the rules of hospitality in doing that, and yet he said to the host, "You didn't greet me. You didn't see me."
Right.
And he said, "Wherever my story is told, her story will be told." And he did that with there again with Mary. She is seeing him. She was also the one who saw him after the tomb. So I think that this is a turn in the discussion I wasn't anticipating, but we can be so busy practicing our gifts that we miss the giver.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yep. You know?
Yeah,
exactly. And maybe that's the whole
thing. The whole thing is a gift is something that, guess what, we didn't buy. It was given to us, right? It's a gift from God, so yeah. And so going from here to the, you have your gift, now what are you going to do? Yeah, what's the passion after that gift?
In this chapter, I share the story of a friend who hadn't seen me for many years, my high school friend, and she went out and bought me a silver and copper horse pin, and she pinned it on my sweater. And she said, I started to put it in the usual place. She said, "No, you have to put it right over your heart." And I said, "Why?" And she said, "Don't you know it's the beating of your heart that gives it the thunder in its hooves?" And I thought that was so poetic. And I'm, you know, anybody who knows what I write about, I'm crazy about horses. And I watched the Zenyatta race at Churchill Downs. The six-year-old mare, who was undefeated for 19 races, the first horse in thoroughbred history, male or female, to get that far, and she was getting ready to run a race at Churchill Downs to set a record, a world record. And they showed her coming out of the tunnel, and she was prancing and literally dancing. And the whole—it wasn't nervous energy. She was throwing her right foot forward. And even when she was on the track, she was dancing, and the crowd went crazy because she wasn't rearing up and anxious. It was like, "Let me run. Let me dance for you." And she's known as the dancing Zenyatta. And she had thunder in her hooves, and that's the dance that God wants to see in us. The little children, we've forgotten how to play. We've gotten muscle-bound and all bent over trying to develop our financial pecs, and we're forgetting our backbone. We're forgetting how to bow and bend. And I think the thunder in our hooves is the passion that keeps us on the battlefield.
As you're talking, one of the questions I had as I was reading is, there are so many things that interfere with our connection to that thunder. You know, and so you named a couple. What are some of the other things? And is there a correlation, I have to ask, to the elements in terms of water? Is there something that seems to inhibit waters more often from their connection to that, the thunder of the hooves that fire their passion, or earth, or wind, or fire?
I think we've forgotten how to feel. We're in our heads a lot. We're constantly being entertained. We're being challenged mentally. I was with a friend recently that I hadn't seen for 20 years practically, and we knew each other when we were pups and just starting out, and he still had that driven energy almost of struggle. And I looked at his financials because we were doing some life counseling, and I looked at him and I said, "You're a multimillionaire. You are a multimillionaire. Say it." And he couldn't even breathe when he was saying. He said, "No, but," you know, he kept going back to when his wife left him in 87, and he said, "I didn't even have a shower curtain." You know, and he was going through that. he imprinted that moment, and he still was not breathing fully. And I talked about anhedonia, the word anhedonia, which is the inability to experience pleasure. And as driven as we are towards entertainment and sex, drugs, and rock and roll and all those other things, is there pleasure in it? The pleasure of the divine connection, the pleasure of feeling God flowing from you as well as into you. So the things that keep us from feeling thunder, I think, are the inability to connect to the moment. We're always in the future or in the past. And also not fully savoring the anhedonia, which is, I think, generic to our generation.
Or seeking it in the wrong places, as you referred to, through sex, drugs, and rock and roll.
But, yeah, I mean, rock and roll accepted for you.
But yeah.
So I was, when I watched the movie The Passion, I think that describes the ultimate passion, suffering, leaving everything. He had so many choices. And just going back to that movie, I think I remember that the victory was not at the end, when he's crucified and all that. It's way before, when he's at Gethsemane and he is suffering, but he stood up and he put his feet, he decided, I'm going to do it. That was the moment of victory. And just decided to go over whatever it takes to save us. And even for those who were going to prosecute him and to, right? For everybody. It's for everybody.
So I'm sitting here thinking about, from the perspective of Omega leadership and how passion is either taught, replicated, encouraged, developed, trained, how does passion show up? And in this chapter, Laura, you talk about that we are not very good at, we do not do a very good job of stirring up the fire that is within us. So that's an interesting thought, an interesting concept. So if you're a leader, any kind of leader, Omega leader, Alpha leader, Beta leader, whatever kind of manager you are, and you're leading a group of people, how does passion transfer to that group?
Well, I'm sitting here thinking about fire leaders that I have known, and I think fire leaders sometimes confuse anger with passion. They get angry at the team, and they think that that's going to communicate passion, but all it does is communicate intimidation. I remember this one leader was actually berating the team, and he had just invested in the company, and he said, I'm going to be here when you all are gone, and you guys can be poor, and I'll be rich. And it was just angry, angry, and this was his motivational speech, and I thought, he has some childhood issues there that are not, it may be what's driving him, but it was a negative driver. It wasn't a positive driver. And I think it's important to distinguish the passion. Passion, the P in passion stands for purity. The purity of feeling it. And you feel it so much that it translates. There's something, and I know that as musicians, you and Shelley's a singer, and we've got musicians here, Vicki and Elisa. I know as a speaker, sometimes there'll be a moment in a speech. There can be 500 people in a room, 2,000, there can be 20. And there's a moment where something is flowing or something happens and you can hear a pin drop. Right?
Mm-hmm.
You've all experienced that. I love that when it happens. Because it's like a passion point has been tipped. And the entire energy in the room feels it. And it doesn't have to be, it can be a sweet note. It can be a whisper. It can be a single, when my guitar weeps, it can be a drum beat at the right place. But there's something when there's a purity that rises beyond the individual, and people sense it.
As you're reading so many chapters, I very much identified with this chapter as a fire, because I think you're really speaking about fire. And you talk about, beginning early in the chapter, how fire often doesn't act like fire, or passion is dampened, passion is harnessed, it's quenched. And I think that, and so I was kind of processing through that. And right now where I am in my leadership journey, I'm looking reflectively back. I see that, in a sense, I had been doing the same thing. I'd been dampening my fire, dampening my passion, because I was misinterpreting passion for anger or passion or want. I was so cautious as to not be too fiery, too hot, to just burn, you know, to burn and not bring about any change, that I went to the opposite extreme and nothing happened.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And so how does one find the balance? Because as you said, fire can burn too hot also. So how does one balance that out?
Well, I think that's a lifelong learning process. For me as a wind fire, I know that I can have these bursts of incredible energy, and I've several times in the last 2 years I've written a book in a weekend, or a major couple of major pieces in a weekend. It just flows through me. But then there's a lot of downtime before that. And there's recovery. Recovery time is necessary. And I think fires need to understand that you cannot burn 110%, 110% of the time, because you will exhaust yourself and you will exhaust your team around you, and then you won't have anybody left to go with you. Yeah, see you. Goodbye. So I want to share this passage, and it's in the movie Secretariat. And here's a shout-out to our friend Priscilla, who's beautiful home was used in the movie Secretariat. This is from Job 39:21-25. And I'm going to say she, because Zenyatta, this is in honor of Zenyatta and Secretariat. Exultantly she paused the soil of the valley and prances eagerly to meet the clash of arms. She laughs at fear. She is afraid of nothing. She recoils before no sword. Quivering with impatience, she eats up the miles. When the trumpet sounds, there is no holding her. I love that. When the trumpet sounds, there is no holding her. So what's holding you back? What trumpet blast are you waiting to hear? Who are you asking permission from in order to run your race? And do you think that God is honored by you pulling a plow?
Wow, powerful. Great food for thought, Lori. Thank you for sharing. And just in closing, we have less than a minute, but something just kind of went across my screen really fast in my head, and I'm not sure if it's in Jeremiah or not, but it talks about how can you run with horses when men on foot wear you out?
Mm.
And a very powerful passage, and it makes me think that it's when we try to keep up the human side of our passion, we're exhausted. But if our passion is in alignment with our gifts, our highest gifts, our talents, our calling, our mission, our focus, then there's no human on foot that will wear us out.
Wow, that is beautiful.
Well said, Shelley. Very well said.
Anyone?
Hard to top that.
Get the passion.
Get the passion.
Got passion.
Got passion. Well, I would just like to close this with a prayer for our listeners. And Lord, you are in the airwaves. Thank you for the opportunity for us to sit in a studio in San Diego and reach our friends and listeners in Argentina. Mm-hmm. You've given technology the wings of technology to you for us, as we will. Lord, ignite the flame of passion in our listeners. Light their fires. May they go forth with joy, speaking languages they didn't even know they knew. May they feel the thunder in their hooves because they are pinned above your heart. Amen.
Thank you, Lord.
Thank you.
Thank you.